wise person, you may be even a Paramahamsa. But he's acting in karma yoga. So therefore, he's acting according to his varnashram dharma as a king. So, and Janak Maharaj is also doing that, Prithu Maharaj, and all of them. So they're acting in the example of a Nishkam Karma Yogi, in the sense that they're engaging a lot of their energies or time in worshipping the Lord, also Ambarish Maharaj, right? There's many examples. And they're acting like someone who's a little bit attached because of their position. But it's just, they're just playing a role. So, they're acting as if they're attached to the work, but they're not. That's basically the answer.
What is the difference between a bhakti yogi in that situation and a karma yogi? Nishkam karma yogi, bhakti yogi in that situation?
Well, there wouldn't be so much difference, I mean, that you could see. But there may be, I mean, if the king was actually a Nishkam Karma Yogi and nothing more, then he won't have devotion to the Lord. He may be making offerings to the Lord. There's still some false ego there. But we'll get to that, the difference, the subtle differences. He'll be acting more like King Kulakshetra. And he was constantly absorbed in hearing pastimes of the Lord, and he acted like a madman. And the other ministers, they were worried, how can we control this person? And every time he hears, you know, Ram Lila, he goes wild. Yeah. And he, once his minister, Brahmin minister, was reading the Ramayana to him, and he heard about Lord Ram being attacked by 14,000 Rakshasas in the forest. And he thought that, how can I allow, even though he's the Supreme Lord, I am his devotee, how can I allow Lord Ram to fight all alone, all of these Rakshasas? So he stood up and called his generals, come, bring your armies, now we will march to save Lord Ram. And the generals, you know, they didn't know what to do. They had to call the armies, and then the lieutenants and the other, they said, what's going on? They said, well, we're going to go and fight, you know, the Rakshasas who are attacking Lord Ramachandra. And they said, what? Are you crazy? You know, said, well, this is the king said, we have to go. So they all jumped on their horses and they started riding, but, you know, they made a plan that, well, you know, we can't do this, how, because we can be riding forever. We don't know, and we're never going to find the Rakshasas, so there'll be no end to it. So they sent an advance party ahead, and they were coming back as if they had just come from that battle. And they reported that Lord Ram had already defeated the Rakshasas, and there's no need to, you know, assist him. And then Lord Ram told us we should go back to the kingdom. You know, so then they all went back, and so the Kulakshetra was pacified. So then after that, the ministers began to think that, what are we going to do now? I mean, every time you hear some intense, dangerous pastime in the Ramayana, he's going to have us marching. So better we tell the Brahmin to skip over certain parts, which are kind of controversial. You know. So the Brahmin reciter was reading daily to King Kulakshetra, and he would skip over those parts. So for months and months, there was no more such upsurges and exhibitions of divine madness by the king. And then once the Brahmin became ill, so he had his son go to the palace and read the Ramayana, but he forgot to tell him about his technique. So the son was reading the Ramayana, and they got to the part where Sita was kidnapped by Ravana. You know, it was like the most intense, right, and karunic, you know, past of compassion. So immediately the king jumped up and he said, "Mother Sita, how can we allow Ravan to grab you in such a way? We must protect our mother. Guards, generals, come. We will march to Ayodhya, to the ends of the ocean." And they got the armies, and he's done it again. What are we going to do? And they got all their armies, thousands of soldiers. They're all marching, you know, to the ocean. And they marched all the way to the ocean with thousands of troops. And then when they got to the ocean, because you can't march to Lanka, you know, so he got to the end of Cape Comorin, I guess, and he jumped right into the ocean, into the deep blue, and started swimming and, you know, wailing and moving his arms, and, you know, and all the generals were just sitting, standing, you know, by the beach and just watching, and, you know, they were bewildered. Then they saw the king was like drowning, and they thought, "Oh my God, what are we going to do?" And he was saying, "Mother Sita, don't worry, I'll save you. Wait, I'm coming, your devotee." And then there was a miracle, and Lord Ram actually came out from the ocean, and on his left side was Sita, and with his right arm he picked up the king. And he just began walking out from the ocean. But the soldiers couldn't see that. They just saw that the king was kind of somehow, you know, coming out of the ocean. And then they were even more amazed. And Ram said, "My dear devotee, do not worry. I have already defeated Ravana. And I have gotten back my dear Sita. So now let us go back to your kingdom and celebrate a victory." And then so he got on his horse, and Ram came with him, actually. And he was, you know, shouting, "Jai, victory!" And, you know, the generals went, "Yeah, nice victory." I mean, the story goes on, but, you know, so a king who is a devotee, you know, he exhibits great symptoms of love. And we see such great kings like Yudhisthira and so forth. So that's why I say that Prithu and Janaka, they didn't exhibit such things. I mean, Prithu obviously could have also, I mean, maybe he did, but not in the records. We don't see any accounts in the Puranas or histories in his divine madness. But they're acting like an ordinary king to protect the citizens and so forth. But the devotees are a little bit more, you know, bhavuka, a little mad, pagal babas, you know. Sometimes they exhibit their insanity. Pagal.
It means you are like Jagannath was a pure devotee, but here he completely exhibited as a doing his activities, like being detached to it. Jampur is given as a Nishkam Dharma Yogi, and the king like Kulashekar, though they were there, but sometimes they used to overlook their duties because of devotion was coming up. But both were pure devotees, but
yeah,
very
right.
Active.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Ambarish would also, he neglected his duties because he was just doing puja all the time. So the citizens, you know, some of the ministers were sometimes worried, but he was the king of Mathura, you know. But somehow everything was managed nicely just because of his bhav, because of his love of God. And things somehow, you know, found their way correctly. Other questions? Yes. Give him.
Give such as Janaka attained perfection. Such as they attained the perfection by performing the performance of prescribed duties. Mm-hmm. But they were already devotees, so what type of perfection they achieved here?
Oh yeah, I don't know. I remember there was some comment about this word samsiddhim. I have to look and see. There was some definition to this word. Let me see if I have it here. Or I have some other. I think it's in another folder. Yeah, I'll have to get back to you on that. I don't really have an answer for that. But in general, let's just say, it's text 20. If my memory serves me well, the word samsiddhim means naishkamyam, freedom from karma. Of course, we know that he couldn't be an ordinary person because the Divine Mother, Sita Devi, became his daughter. So he's definitely a devotee. Yeah. It's sort of, he has nothing to attain. But for others and for Arjuna's state, Krishna is telling that he attained perfection by performing his prescribed duties, so that Arjuna will have faith that if he fights, that he'll also attain his perfection. Plus, Arjuna is also not an ordinary kshatriya. He's the Nityasiddha Parishad. So you can see it's just, these are just like a script, a manuscript in a drama. And there's the various purposes for the different words in the Shastra. Because obviously Arjuna doesn't need to attain perfection and neither does Janaka. But it's for our benefit, he's speaking. But I'll check on that. I remember there was some statement, I just can't remember every definition of all the words. Anything else? Yes, Chaitanya Chari, Prabhu.
Yesterday when the Acharya's comment saying how the modes are like hosts,
yeah,
and no amount of verbal instruction will work. This is the case that all preaching, all distributing books will appear to be futile. So how is that being understood?
Well, as I gave the example of the man who was touching the books and he became a devotee, even though he was ripping them up. Yeah. So, in other words, your words are not as potent as the scriptures, as the Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam is not mere words. It's Krishna in the form of a book. So, yeah, just trying to explain to somebody philosophy, it won't help if he's in that haunted condition. But if you give him a book, and he gives a donation, or if he hears a Harinam party, or if he takes prasadam, these are all directly Krishna. So then gradually Krishna purifies that person. As Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur described, that you know, the only thing that can help him is the medicine of mantras, and by hearing and chanting about the Lord and the mercy of the devotees. So there's benefit in distributing books and there's benefit in preaching. But generally we don't preach to, I mean, you can preach to somebody, but the best way to preach to them is give them a book and give them prasad. And then gradually as their ghost-like, you know, as their ghosts begin to go away and their fever comes down, then they can begin to understand the philosophy. You ask most of the devotees that when they first got their book, when they got their first book, did they actually understand it? And most of them will admit that they didn't. Even Rabindra Sarup told him this. He said he got Ishopanishad, and he said he couldn't make heads or tails of it. But then later, after he had some association and so forth, then he could understand.
So when emphasis is given on becoming, understanding the philosophy thoroughly and getting convinced, and by teaching also we appeal to the reason and the intelligence of the people. So this order is futile. Otherwise, then we can just decide how you ashloka, why give classes, that is the practical mode.
Well, the people, if the people are coming to the class, it indicates that they're a little bit higher than the ghost-like non-devotees or, you know, lying near the train station. And so to the degree that they're free from their illusion, to that degree, some lectures of philosophy will help.
Somebody
in
Satyagraha, then you can understand probably, but in lower modes, it will be difficult for you.
Yes.
Yeah. At one point, the Acharya asked that the Shastras are useless because the Jnanendriyas are controlled by the demigods. So what was the answer to that? How Shastras are not actually, they are not powerless as far as falling Shastras is concerned?
Because it was explained that people have their people have raga and vesha. In other words, they're attached to enjoying and enjoying sense objects, and they're detached or averse to the pious activities that will help them. So the Shastra tries to direct those inclinations. So if the person's dutiful, then if they at least try to follow the Shastra, then their aversion towards pious acts or devotional acts will subside, and their will increase, and their aversion to or their attachment to impious activities will subside, and their aversion to pious activities will go away, and that they will become attached. There's benefit there. The Shastric injunctions deal with the raga and vesha of the conditioned souls. Yes.
You are telling once that Kshatriyas are, the quality of Kshatriyas, they are very bold, they never want to run away from the battle. And in fact, you told in one class that they derive great happiness when they die in the battle. And we see Arjuna got defeated and he didn't want to fight. So he was told that Kshatriya is not supposed to do like that. So is it the other way that he is, Chaturvarnam is Guna Karma Vibhagashana, according to more his quality that is worth. So rather than telling him that you are a Kshatriya and you don't run away, can we not conclude that his dharma is something else? Because a Kshatriya doesn't get afraid like this.
Your basic question is that trying to understand Arjuna's varna?
Yes, I understand, but this doubt. Because Kshatriyas, they derive in fact pleasure to die. And yesterday we were hearing the Sama Dama Danda here, that the Brahmanas cannot rule because they cannot do danda and all this kind of thing. That's not their nature.
Well, Arjuna had fought previously, and he was never afraid. So he wasn't even afraid of Lord Shiva or the generals of the Kuru army in Virat's kingdom. I think that's what, Matsyadesh? Matsyadesh, yeah, Virat's kingdom. So he already proved that he's a Kshatriya, I think. His main problem is his compassion and his attachment to Bhishma and Drona. So that's more his problem than fear. It's not like afraid. But he may be exhibiting some symptoms just externally because of yoga maya. So I don't think there's any doubts in our minds, you know, that he's a Kshatriya. He's already proven himself. And then once his confusion is set aside, then we see that he was valiantly and fearlessly fighting throughout the entire 18 days of the battle. He didn't, you know, run away at any point out of fear. Even though he was facing Bhishma, Drona, Karna, he didn't run away from them.
So is it that sometimes a real Kshatriya would also get overcome by
what, compassion?
Yeah,
it's
non-Kshatriya qualities.
None of the real Kshatriyas. No. That's why Krishna told Arjuna that the Maharatis, they will consider that you have left the battlefield out of fear only. They won't think that it's out of compassion for your relatives. Yes?
How these modes are acting?
How the modes are acting in different yoga systems, like Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. Oh, in Bhakti Yoga also more attacks or what is the...
Bhakti Yoga is more...
Raja Karma and Sankara Gun, they act on each week yoga system.
Well, the lower ones are more in passion and ignorance. Because there's attachment in Karma Kanda, Karma Yoga. But when one comes to Jnana Yoga, that means he has to be at least in the mode of goodness. And Ashtanga Yoga. He has to be firmly situated in mind and sense control. And bhakti is considered higher, so it's considered near guna. But because even a sadhaka, he's performing bhakti. So, okay, he may not be completely free from the modes, but he's performing the same activity that the people in Goloka Vrindavan are performing. Making garlands for Krishna, singing for Krishna, dancing. Making, cooking for Krishna. So those activities are nirguna. But Ashtanga Yoga and Jnana Yoga are actions in goodness. So by performing activities in goodness, one cannot actually get revelation of God. It's not the full manifestation of God. It's partial. Jnanis can see Brahma. Brahman, that's God, but also incomplete. So those yoga systems are in the mode of goodness. And therefore they cannot actually give bhakti. Because bhakti is not, cannot come from the modes. See. So real bhakti is nirguna. And then nishkam karma is also in the mode of goodness. But maybe some slight passion, depending on the person's level. Because some attachment to work. And sakam karma is, you know, mainly passion with some goodness mixed in. And karma kanda is mainly passion. And animal life is ignorance. Basically, that's the breakdown.
But Prabhuji, just like someone is like more on goodness, but there is also sattvic ahankar is there. And as the mode is like, yeah, very higher level, so it has more chance of more this ego, right? Satyata hamka. So how to overcome? We say that we have to come to that goodness, but there is a lot of chance to be like proud of having such big qualities.
So how to overcome that? Chant Hare Krishna. Surrender to the spiritual master. Because then one's pride will be mitigated by those things. So we'll discuss that more later in chapter 14. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Three ten. This sloka is applicable for all the varnas, when the Vaishya and Shudra.
Sahajagya Praja Shvishtha.
Perform your Piska beauty, then you will achieve liberation. It's applicable for everyone.
Well, it's meant for everybody, yeah.
So now Vaishya and Shudra, after performing their Piska duties, how they get liberation? Whether they go to the higher varnas again and then they achieve liberation or from that place?
They develop the qualities of the higher varna without changing their activities. Just like devotees also. A devotee who is born with the Shudra mentality, Shudra body, or Shudra-like nature or abilities, then he will continue acting in that nature. But his inner qualities will develop higher than the brahmanas. Just like Kanchi Purna was from a Shudra family, but Ramanuja wanted to accept him as a guru. Kanchi Purna was walking around in Kanchi, and sometimes in the middle of the street he would start talking to somebody, but nobody was there. So, you know, many of the people thought he was, you know, Pago Baba. But actually he was discussing with Singh Bhagwan, he was having darshan. So gradually the more astute Brahmins, they could perceive this. So then gradually, although in the beginning he wasn't even allowed in the temple, but then they actually made a little portion near the temple, they cut away some place where he can stay there and offer the chamra for a Bhadaraj. So, but he still was kind of kept to the side because he had his janma was in karma was like from Shudra. He came from a Shudra family, but they made this kind of special arrangement for him. So, but his activities didn't change, and you know, also in the Madhva line is Kanaka. He was also a disciple of Vyasatirtha, and he was a Mahabhagwat. He would just chant on the ektar and sing bhajans in front of the Udipi temple. And he didn't try to go inside the temple, but he wasn't allowed in the temple. So he was also Mahabhagwat. And then the Didi actually reciprocated with him by creating an earthquake. And then there was a hole broke in the temple, so that he could see the deity from where he was sitting. And then the deity actually turned towards that hole. So when the earth shook, all the Brahmins came on the altar to make sure everything was okay with the deity. And then when they saw this hole break, and then Kanaka could see the deity from where he was sitting, they were already astonished by that. But then when the deity actually moved to the face, the hole, then they were really shocked. Then they began to accept that he was not an ordinary person. But see, the Shudra, of course these are rather extreme examples in having, but nevertheless it does serve to give the idea that the person, we say a Vaishnava with Shudra Varna, we can't say a Shudra Vaishnava because that's offensive, because a Vaishnava is higher than a Brahmin. But a Shudra who's born with Shudra Varna, he does, his inner state rises up gradually as he advances past Vaishya, Kshatriya, and past Brahman, and to the Mahabhagavat level. But his external behavior generally doesn't change. Sometimes it may happen, but generally it doesn't. Because of general tendency and because of the social situation. He doesn't try, it's not that he tries to, you know, achieve material acclamation and promotion on the social level. No, he doesn't care about that. So he's quite happy just still making shoes or, you know, making bricks or singing or dancing or whatever he does. He's quite happy with that and he advances internally. But actually, it is said that if a Shudra or a Vaishya or anyone, if they don't actually come like up to the Brahman level and beyond, then it means their life is wasted. There are statements in the Shastra like that. So the Shudra is meant for, he's meant to get elevation by following his prescribed duties. And if he does that and then begins his Bhagavad Arpit Nishkam Karma, he'll achieve liberation while, you know, still a cobbler or whatever. That's why we have this, you know, this famous traditional story of Narada and the cobbler and the brahmana. Because the cobbler had deep faith in the Lord, even though he was, you know, dealing with leather. It's like the lowest occupation you can have, practically. But internally, externally, those things don't change. And for devotees also.
They would perform their only prescribed duties, not even like brahmana they chant. So even the Vaishnava and Shudra, after achieving those qualities of brahmana in their heart,
they continue with their swadharma, their original swadharma according to their janma, their body. Of course, it's just too much of a hassle to try to convince the other people in the society that actually I have the qualities now of a brahmana and I can do some pujas for you. And then the people won't go to him. They'll think, oh, this guy's from a low family. I don't want to go to him. They won't accept that. People are too much externally oriented. And generally they're not basing everything on the guna and karma, but on janma. But for those people who are astute, the Brahmins in Kanchi could see Kanchipurna was a real Vaishnava, Mahabhagava. They didn't think he was a Pagabhava. So they brought him into the temple. And they constructed that thing on the side of the altar. And he would go there and fan the deity. They would never let any Shudra do that. Never. But they still had to follow certain restrictions just because of the tradition and because of the social situation.
Guruji, according to this traditional system, person who follows his prescribed duty gets purified. After that he goes for Dhyana Marga and then Ashtanga Yoga and then.
Mm-hmm.
So whether this Vaishnava Shudra, they also used to follow this process after getting purified from prescribed duty.
They could possibly begin Jnana Yoga.
Without beginning that, they would not achieve the liberation.
Huh?
Without beginning that Jnana and Ashtanga, unless they get the mercy of any devotee, if not, without beginning the Jnana and Ashtanga, how do
they... They could. I mean, it's possible. I mean, I don't know. There may be examples of someone who's like a Shudra or Vaishya, and he is offering the fruits of his work, and attains self-realization, and then goes to the forest and begins doing yoga, or like this. But then he would need someone to teach him the yoga system. But it, you know, I would say it's rare. It could happen. it would be more difficult for him, because how is he going to study the Yoga Sutras or the Upanishads? He would need some guru who would instruct him. How would they? Well, they could just do Nishkam Karma and just achieve liberation. No. They don't really need to do the inactive yoga system. Well, more questions, or shall we start chapter 4? Chaitanya Charan has a river of questions. Again, Prashna Sada.
Shloka,
even
one can cease that no one can refrain from activity even for a moment. Yeah. That would make Jnana Yoga seem even theoretically impossible. So how is
Jnana
Yoga prescribed for anyone at all?
Good.
Why is it given in the Shastra also?
So the Shastra it's just a trick. Nahi kaschit kshanam api jatu tishtha akarama. Being pushed. Well, somebody on the jnana level, the person doesn't even endeavor for his bodily maintenance. He's a really detached person. So Krishna says that, you know, no one can do this, but actually later we see that he says it is possible. So it's a trick. No, it's just that it's not really a trick, but it's just that there are different facets of the absolute truth, and even in the yoga system there's so many considerations. I mean, Krishna's talking to Arjuna, who's a kshatriya and a grihastha. So for a kshatriya, there's no question of just sitting and meditating, you know. So passionate. But it is possible for other people who actually develop jnana-nishtha. And if they come to that level, then they can do it. It's possible, but it's rare. It's a rare soul. We'll see. We'll understand as we go along. We go to chapter 6.
Is it that in this case, like those activities they do even at the platform of goodness, Jnana Yoga scale? So what activities this Prabhupada purport refers is like putting fire or for begging. What do you mean? Five Mahasunas we say.
Mahasuna.
Killing of insect and all these things.
Yeah.
So this activity will be performed by him only also, Jnana Yoga also. It has to go. But he's on the level jnana platform. So both separate says that jnana is dakta dharmani. So these small things immediately can be gone. So that way, is it that?
But also for the nishkam karma yogi who attains a high state, he can also burn those things up.
I mean to say that it's possible for him also. Jnana yogi to perform jnana yoga. If he's in the goodness, even if he does some activities like smaller, so reaction will be easily gone.
Yeah, he's achieved Naishkarmya. Yeah, he doesn't have to do Pancha Mahayagya. He's a transcendentalist. He's above that. He's achieved Naishkarmya.
This is small clarification. This is about karma shukrodesha. Here Prabhupada writes, if therefore mode of passion, instead of being degraded into mode of ignorance, is elevated to mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of life. So I just wanted to know that what is Prabhupada is talking about this by the prescribed method of living and acting.
It's the injunctions in the Shastras, according to the Adhikar, the person, whether it's karma or Nishkam Karma or Jnana Yoga or Bhakti, Generally, it means Vainashram Dharma. That's prescribed regulations for living and acting. If someone's performing his religious duties at his level, then from the passion will be purified and come to goodness. But that's the goal of all of these religious injunctions. Because from goodness, then you can go forward. And, you know, below that, it's like you're struggling with sin and desires. So bhakti and karma yoga both bring one to that level. Generally, someone does karma yoga until they come to sattva-guna. And then they have a choice. They can do jnana yoga, ashtanga, or bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga can be engaged even lower than karma yoga, as we mentioned. Right? And if we get to chapter 4 today, then we'll see how that's true. Because if there's a really far out commentary by Bhaktivinoda Thakur on one of these verses, really deep, and it's talking about how the Lord appears outside of hard bhumi, different species of life, amongst the antajas and malachas. It's really interesting. So, the general procedure is that they perform Swadharma in Varnashram Dharma and some Karma Yoga, or at least Karma Kanda, and gradually they come to goodness. And then Karma doesn't attack them anymore. Okay, so can we... Right. Okay, just three more questions. 1, 2, and 3. Then we'll start.
Shastras, you have any detailed description about regulated sense gratification. And Prabhupada in this purport 3.34 condemns even having a regulated sense gratification.
No, he doesn't condemn it, but he says be careful. Don't become overly attached to them. Don't become attached to them. Because that can also slip you up somehow. It can create some problem.
So is it that in the Vedic society, or like Varnashram, it's expected that one, in the initial stages, beginning stages, one practices regulated sense gratification, and then over a period of time, he gets sufficient strength to overcome that? That's how the process is designed? Or because at the same time, we also hear one should not try to artificially be on an elevated platform. Not try to pose oneself as on a higher platform.
Yeah, that's the general procedure.
And we hear the example just...
regulated sense gratification. And, you know, I mean, the acharyas have said that everybody has to satisfy the senses to one degree or another. Even those who are renounced, they have to eat, they have to sleep. You know, you can't throw them in the snow and expect them to just sleep. Yeah. So, and for the grihasthas and the karma yogis and the karma kandis, then, yeah, they have more, a higher, you know, standard of sense gratification that they require than a brahmachari or a sannyasi. So, but everybody follows their prescription at that level and they advance. But because the material world is created in such a way that there's always some upheaval or some disturbance, then if the person doesn't get his allotted amount of sense gratification, he shouldn't be attached to that. He should be ready to tolerate that. That's the point. So the full extent. That example is given by Krishna to Uddhava in the 11th canto on the Bhagavatam. So when we're talking about sense control, that example is very much appropriate for everybody. So we should apply that example to ourselves.
In practical, like for example, in the case of prasanna, so to what extent should it be let loose and to what extent?
It depends on the individual. As much as you need, you take. How much, how do you know how much you need? Because you have to experiment. Some days you take a little too much and then you feel, ooh. And then other days you try to curb it down and maybe you take a little too little and then you're always thinking of, maybe there's a few chapatis left or I can go back there, right? So then it's just a matter of time you find your balance. So then if you pull too tightly on the horse, he'll throw you off, right? And if you let go completely, then he'll just go running off the cliff. Ah! He'll just go right over into a ditch or something, you know. So there has to be something in between there. You're holding the reins, but not so tight and not completely loose. It's in the middle somewhere. So each person has the balance to find. You know, that's probably the first thing that you work on, is finding the balance for you. Because each person, the balance is in a different place.
Regarding the position of Babajis, where they come in yoga ladder?
Baba. In the yoga ladder.
So
what kind of Babajis are you talking about?
Suppose Jiva Goswami or Gaur Kishore Maharaj, they have complete devotion.
Yes.
But then activity is not there. So where do they come?
They're in the Bhakti Yoga School, in the Bhakti platform, Nirgun Bhakti. They're Paramahamsas. Not only they're Paramahamsas, but they're Nitya Siddha Harisha. So, you can't even find a place for them. They're too so elevated. Well, those Babas, you know.
See, when if they are not engaged,
they're Paramahamsas.
Even if activity is not there, they're considered in Bhakti Yoga.
Yeah. Because the activity is going on in the heart. They're doing all their seva and nitya lila. They're seeing the lilas and they're actually participating in the uppercut lilas. So they're active, but not in this worldly plane. Okay, this is the last question in the back.
To set an example, one should work, even though work that's associated with some faults.
Mm-hmm.
For example, one is businessman and he has to hide his profit. So cheating is one of the...
He has to hide his profit, yes.
So cheating is one of the anartham. So if work is not conducive for one's Krishna consciousness, what
you should do? What? You mean doing sales? Marketing? Like this? Merchant work you're talking about? You want to hear about that? Yeah, well anyway, it's not really cheating in the very negative sense of the term. It's just business. In the business world, everybody's a cheater. So, therefore, just like in Russia, everybody takes something from the factory they work in. It's considered socially acceptable. And also for like dentists to get some money under the table and not give it to the big boss who owns the building. You know? Right? So it's acceptable. It's not considered cheating. Although it's cheating, but it's because everyone does it, so it's okay. So in business, everybody tells that for you, I make no profit. But they cannot exist without some profit. So when a person says that, it just means that, you know, he's giving you the lowest price he can possibly give, you know, without some money, without too much profit. He's giving you something. He's making something out of it. So anyway, that's okay. That's not, it's for Vaishnava, he can make business, and he also has to say that I'm not making any profit, and he's making some profit. It's okay. Krishna also, you know, he's from Mathura, so he's also, you know, wheeling and dealing and cheating in different ways. That's a different thing. That's a philosophy class. It's not a counseling session. Counseling session is in a different forum. This is philosophy. Okay? Well, if you want some counseling, go to a counselor. But the philosophy is that the Vaishnava who has Vaishnavarna, he can also make profit, and he doesn't have to reveal how much profit he's making. What's the big deal? Even Krishna told Yudhisthira to lie on the battlefield. That if Yudhisthira can lie, who's higher, he's a Kshatriya, an emperor, then what to speak of some manya, you know, some vanik. Okay, now we will begin.
So all devotees have a request to you that if you could end by 12 o'clock and then at 12 o'clock tell us something about how you met so far, a little bit about your son.
Oh my God.
I have 1.5 hours left.
Okay, we'll see. Plus my dream. Okay, let us chant together, brothers. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavanaham Adhyayam Nivasvanare Paha Manurishvakate Bravid. The personality of Godhead, Lord Shri Krishna, said, I have instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god Vivaswan, and Vivaswan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind. And Manu, in turn, instructed it to Ikshvaku. So now, in this chapter, Krishna explains the reasons for his appearance and the eternal nature of his birth and activities in Janma and Karma. And he also gives a list to Arjuna of all types of sacrifices. And of all the sacrifices, jnana is supreme. Knowledge is supreme. So in the previous chapter, Krishna was glorifying Nishkam Karma Yoga and its result, which was knowledge. So now in this verse, Krishna, in one verse, he's glorifying both of these yogas with the word yoga. So he spoke about these both in chapter 3, so now he's glorifying them both in this one verse. He glorifies Nishkam Karma as a means for attaining jnana. Nishkam Karma is a means to both Jnana Yoga and Bhakti Yoga. One can go either way. He can also begin Ashtanga Yoga. That will come later. But this Jnana Yoga is not impersonal. knowledge matures, one attains jnana nishtha and he becomes detached. So he can renounce the world, he can renounce his work, he can renounce sense gratification. That's called sannyas. And in this, these first six chapters, we're talking about karma sannyas, giving up work. We're not just talking about someone with a danda and upavesh and Gaudiya Vaishnava sannyasi, although there are some similarities. But we're talking about karma sannyas, giving up work, and that's in chapter 5. In Bhakti Yoga, work continues after realization, after Gyan Nishtha, because Bhakti Yoga includes all of the components of the work, of all the yoga system. So his activity continues, but it's nirgun karma. Okay? So he doesn't have to renounce that, because it's not based on his rajas and his selfishness. It's an expression of his nirgun bhakti to serve Krishna. It's his seva to Krishna. But we're not discussing fully the bhakti path now. We're talking about the path of karma again. So, at the end of chapter 1, Arjuna was having a nervous breakdown. In the beginning of chapter 2, it was mentioned that Ashu Purna Kalakshanam. So that Arjuna's eyes were full of tears. And then Krishna began to, and he was giving arguments, and then Krishna began to instruct him like this. Then at the end of chapter 2, Krishna was describing this elevated sthita pragya level. And we mentioned that he was talking about buddhi so many times. And he was talking about detachment and sense control and peace. But at the same time, he was telling Arjuna to fight and do his karma. So therefore, Arjuna was confused and asked the question in the verse of chapter 3. So now, we should try to analyze what is the connecting features or causal factors between chapter 3 and chapter 4. Why does Krishna say, imam vivasvate yogam proktavan aham avinyam, that I told this yoga system to Vivaswan? Suddenly, out of the blue, he starts talking about the Sangha, and how he told this yoga to the Sangha. Why does he say this? Did he have a sudden urge to explain the parampara, the cyclic chain? What do you think? Shamaru Prabhu.
Last chapter is Avrutam Jnanam Edena. So it's again how the knowledge is covered.
Yes.
And he was also talking about Nishkam Karma.
Yes.
So basically, what is this transcendental knowledge he wants to clarify?
Yes, true. That's a general link. But what is the more specific link? In other words, he could have said, I told this science to Lord Brahma. Or I instructed, the Navayogendras in this, or Mahadev. Why does he tell that I told Vivaswan this science? Okay. Wait a minute, you should raise your hand. Yes, Radhishan.
Vivaswan also comes in there. Kingly or a royal order,
right.
And Krishna also wants to establish his supremacy in the series of his verses. Krishna wants to
establish the supremacy of
himself.
Of himself.
Sure.
Well, okay, we could conjecture that that's a possibility. You know, Yes. Arjuna is in the Suryavamsa dynasty. Bibhishan is the leader of a planet called the Sun. Right? And he is the ruler there. He is a Kshatriya. He's the head of all the Suryavamsa Kshatriyas. And Arjuna is also the ruler of a planet called Earth. They both have the same job, the same function. Arjuna comes in the same line as Bhimaswan. And what is the job of the Kshatriya who's ruling? Other than getting taxes and protecting the citizens, but what does he have to do for the citizens? What is his one of his main functions as a leader?
To enlighten them in God consciousness.
To enlighten them in God consciousness, yes. What else?
To make arrangements so that they can get out of the sense gratification.
Get free from sense gratification, yeah. What was Krishna just talking about at the end of chapter 3? Huh?
Certain example.
No, at the end of chapter
3.
Getting free from lust. The ruler's main duty is to help the citizens, to enlighten them and engage them in their specific activities, swadharma, so that they can become free from lust. Prabhupada mentions in the commentary, the kings of all planets are especially meant for the protection of the inhabitants. And therefore, the royal order should understand the science of Bhagavad Gita in order to be able to rule the citizens and protect them from material bondage to lust. So this is the connection between chapter 3 and 4. Krishna was describing to Arjuna the karma yoga system brings knowledge, and you realize that you're different from the body and the mind and the intelligence. And in this way, with spiritual strength, you can conquer this enemy, lust. So this is nishkam karma with jnana, coming to the level of jnana nishkam. So He remembered, because Arjuna is the leader of a planet, his duty is to help protect the citizens from lust. And he remembered when he was telling Bhimaswan the same thing. And he just said, I told this system of yoga, not just to you, Arjuna, but I told it to the sun god. And you were there at that time. You know, like this, so this will come up now. Prabhupada describes the time period that the Gita is over 120 million years old because Bhimaswan died is very ancient. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to get into all the things now. So Prabhupada also writes, it was spoken to the sun god Bhimaswan because he is also a Kshatriya and is the father of all Kshatriyas who are descendants of the sun god or the Suryavamsa Kshatriyas. Okay. So, this is a very ancient science. It's not just 5,000 years old. It's over 120 million years old. And actually, the real fact is that it's eternal. Because in the previous day of Brahma, the Lord came and he spoke to Arjuna at that time. And in the previous day of Brahma and the previous, and even in the previous creation. So the science is eternal. The Bhagavad Gita is actually eternal. Okay, text 2. Evam parampara praptam imam raja shayo vidu sataleneha mahata yoga nashta parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Right? So the Lord spoke it to the Raja Rishis and Brahma Rishis, particularly because the duty of the Raja Rishis is to protect the citizens. That's very important that they understand these things. And now in the course of time, yoga nashta, it appears that this yoga system is destroyed or lost. So therefore, he is speaking to Pratapa, Arjuna. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that I'm telling you this because of two sentiments that are inherent within our relationship. First, you are my bhakta, which means you are my servant. And secondly, you are my sakha. It's not a, you're my friend. It's not appropriate to disclose this knowledge to anyone who doesn't have these attributes. That is why it is rahasyam. It is a secret. Prabhupada comments that at the present moment, now you'll notice in this section, he really gets fiery about the parampara, because, well, it's what Krishna's talking about. At the present moment, there are many editions of the Gita, especially in English, but almost all of them are not according to authorized disciplined succession. There are innumerable interpretations rendered by different mundane scholars, but almost all of them do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, although they make a good business on the words of Sri Krishna. This spirit is demonic, because demons do not believe in God, but simply enjoy the property of the Supreme. Right? They want the kingdom of God without God. And they want the words of Krishna without Krishna, because then they can propound their own doctrines and various twisted philosophies using Krishna's book. Okay. Text 3. Sa evayam maya tedya yoga prokta paratanaha bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam yatan uttamam. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, because you are my devotee as well as my friend. And therefore, you can understand the transcendental mystery of this science. So this friendship, sakha, it indicates or implies knowing the heart of the Guru. In other words, they're the same in heart. They understand one another. Prabhupada again comments, there are a number of editions of this great book of knowledge. Some of them have commentaries by devotees, and some of them have commentaries by the demons. Commentation by the devotees is real, whereas that of the demons is useless. Prabhupada continues, the demonic do not accept Lord Krishna as he is. Instead, they concoct something about Krishna and mislead general readers from the path of Krishna's instructions. Here is a warning about such misleading paths. One should try to follow the disciplic succession from Arjuna and thus be benefited by this great science of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. So also we see that, okay, Krishna mentioned in the first verse, yoga. He's referring to this karma yoga, bringing to one to jnana yoga. In the second verse, the same thing, yoga. And in this verse also, yoga prokta. Right, that I told this to you, Arjuna. This is a very secret system, because not everybody is a devotee or a friend of Krishna. That's why it's very rare. And this is the uttama. It's above tama. Yoga system. Arjuna uvacha aparam bhavato janma param janma vivasvatah kat तम एतत् बझानीयम् तम आदौ प्रकवानि इति. Arjun said, the sun god Vibhaswan is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed this science to him? So how could he not believe Krishna's words? The fact is that Arjuna is not inquiring for himself, but for those who do not believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or for the demons who do not like the idea that Krishna should be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For them only, Arjuna inquires on this point, as if he were himself not aware of the personality of Godhead. As it will be evident from the 10th chapter, Arjuna knew perfectly well that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the fountainhead of everything, and the last word in transcendence. Of course, Krishna also appeared as the son of Devaki on this earth. How Krishna remained the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, the eternal original person, is very difficult for an ordinary man to understand. Therefore, to clarify this point, Arjuna put this question before Krishna so that he himself could speak authoritatively. See, Arjuna knew that a gentleman will never begin speaking about himself, bragging. And so therefore he asked this question to allow Krishna to speak about himself. And this is like the seed, in one sense, of the middle six chapters, where Krishna speaks a lot about himself and tells all about his potencies and how he controls the worlds and how everything is actually him. He is the taste of water, the light of the sun and moon, etc. How the yoga paths are meant for going to him. And how he rectifies the mistakes of his devotees. And so many things about himself. So this is the first time where Krishna is speaking about himself. And actually Arjuna knows Krishna is the Supreme just by looking at his face. He doesn't need Krishna to prove that he's God, either by speaking or by showing his Vishwarupa. But he's, as Prabhupada said, he's doing it for others. For demons who don't accept it, and for other people that maybe have some doubts. Okay, text number 5. So now, Arjuna has asked this question, and this kind of forces Krishna to reveal that he's Bhagavan. Because he can't answer the question without revealing his divinity. It's almost like you could say he made a mistake by saying he told Vibhaswan. Because now he kind of put himself in a position where Arjuna asked him, you know, how can this be? And now he has to answer. But that is kind of like a planned mistake for our benefit. So we can understand about Krishna's janma and karma. All right, text 5. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Bhuni Me Vyatitani Janmani Tavacharjana Tanyaham Veda Sarvani Natvam Vittha Parantapa. The Personality of Godhead said, many, many births both you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy, Prantapa. So he answers the question in this verse. Many births both you and I have passed. Krishna says, though, I have also instructed this science in my other avatars. And tavacha means you were also there. You have also appeared as my associate whenever I have descended. You were there when I spoke to Vibhaswan. I, being Sarvagya, remember all my appearances for the fulfillment of my lila. side. I, being Sarvagyat, remember all my appearances. But for the fulfillment of my lila, I've covered your knowledge. That's why you don't remember your previous births. So now you have the abhiman of Kuntiputra. You have the abhiman or the mentality as the son of Kunti in the role of a great warrior. So now, so the implication is that now please assist me in Dharma Samstapana and Vinashaya cha Duskritam. Duskrita Vinash and Dharma Samstapana. This is the implication that because you are, you have the mentality of a great warrior in this lila, in this avatar, or in this descent that I have come. So now the implication is that you now please assist me. Looks like it's indirectly referring to text 8. Krishna says that you are dull like a tree, Arjuna. Now I've covered your intelligence to perform my lila. So this is the very clear difference between Bhagavan and Jiva. Although Arjuna is not just a Jiva, he's Sarup Shakti, but he's playing the role of an ordinary person. So the Lord remembers everything, but Arjuna does not. Even though Arjuna has always been with Krishna whenever he descended in all of his different avatars, comes with him. So text 6. Ajopi san avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropi san Prakritim Svamadhishthaya Sambhavadiyatmamayaya. Although I am unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, I still appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So Krishna says that you and I are the same age, Arjuna, but I am the controller of all. And I am unborn, while you are controlled and born again and again. So in this verse, there's a lot of commentary by the Acharyas, Ramanujacharya, Sridhar Swami, Vishwanath Chakravarti, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the words, the important words here that they mention is Aja, unborn, Avyayatma, indestructible, Ishvara, the Supreme Lord, Prakritin, which means various things, nature, and Atmamayaya, by my energy. These are the words that they comment on. So Arjuna hears Aja, that Krishna says Aja, and he says, but so what? I mean, the jiva is also Aja. But then Krishna says, but I am Avyayatma. My body is indestructible. The jiva is also Aja, but his body is destroyed again and again. But Krishna's body is not destroyed. So that Krishna explains to Arjuna that the jiva takes birth according to karma and ignorance. So he's forced to take birth again and again, according to his karma, pious and impious. And so the jiva changes his body according to that, piety and impiety. Sarasat yoni janmasu, he says later. But I keep my sarup, because I am the Supreme. This is beyond logic. Yeah, we'll get to that. So, Ishvara means the Supreme Lord. And it indicates that, therefore, Krishna is non-different from his body. Whereas the jiva is different from his body. Therefore, he has to change it. But someone who's Ishvara is not different from his body. There's no need to change it. So therefore, Avyayatma, his Atma is indestructible. It doesn't change. And he says, Prakritim Svam Adishtaya. I'm situated in my property. He's talking about his Sarup. Satchidananda Sarup, Vishwanath Chakravarti says. This word, Prakriti, means. Satchidananda Sarup. Because Prakriti could be taken as material. And so the Vaishnavacharyas attack the Mayavadis, who might try to prove that yes, God's form is material, because it's made, he says that my body is made of Prakriti in this verse. So Vishwanath Chakravarti says that this word Prakriti can also mean Satchidananda Sarup, not just the material nature, but the Chit Shakti. Then Sridhar Swami says it refers to Shuddha Sattva. Ramanujacharya says it refers to his Swabhav, the Lord's Swabhav. That means Satchidananda, free from the material nature. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the word Prakriti means Chit Shakti or Yoga Maya. It's the Lord's original form, but it appears like a human form. Because like when Vishnu comes, like it's like, you know, effulgence and, you know, this, everybody can see this is God. But Krishna's come, he's the original of Vishnu, and he appears like an ordinary human. So this is Yogamaya. It's Chit Shakti. But it's kind of in Nara Lila, Lokavat Lila Kaivalyam, Brahma Sutras say. When the Lord comes, he comes just like an ordinary person, Lokavat. Now, the word Atmamaya is described. Sridhar Swami says it means the potency of complete and infallible knowledge and strength. The potency of complete and infallible knowledge and strength. In other words, like Gyan Shakti and Bal Shakti, something like this. Complete. Purna. Gyan Shakti and Purna Bal Shakti. And Ramanuja says that here the word Maya means Jnana, his own knowledge. This is confirmed in the Sanskrit dictionary. The word Maya also can mean Jnana. Ramanujacharya has mentioned. Now, Prabhupada comments here. He remembers everything of his many, many past births. Whereas a common man cannot remember what he has done even a few hours before. Prabhupada's revealing the nature of the Nitya Bhada Jiva. Can't even remember, you know, what he did a few hours before. And yet, men often dare to claim to be God. What a joke. Come on, Prabhupada's. Now, Prabhupada mentions Prakriti means nature, Svabhava. Right? So he is just describing Ramanuja's statement, as well as Sarup, which is the statement of Sarup, of Vishwanath Chakravarti. Or one's own form. Anyway, that's another. So that's what Prakriti Saru, that's the translation of Saru. So Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur quotes from the Sanskrit dictionary. He says, in the Sanskrit dictionary it is written, Sam Siddhi Prakritis Tve Me Sarupancha Svabhavascha. The words samsiddhi or prakriti mean sarup or svabhava. So the samsiddhi and prakriti are the similar words. Maybe it has some relevance to the question that we were asked about samsiddhi. Karmana, karmanaiva, samsiddhi. Right? Maybe. Anyway. But that's a different definition of the word samsiddhi and prakriti. It means sarupascha, svabhavascha. One's own form and one's own nature. Prabhupada also writes, the Lord's appearance in His original form, or His appearance in His original form, is His causeless mercy bestowed upon the living entities so that they can concentrate on the Supreme Lord as He is, and not on mental concoctions or imaginations, which the impersonalist wrongly thinks the Lord's forms to be. The word maya, or atma maya, refers to the Lord's causeless mercy, according to the Vishva Kosh Dictionary. So Prabhupada also is quoting from the dictionary. It can mean the Lord's mercy or His own sweet will, He often said in some lectures. So this, all the commentators have made statements about these words, prakriti, atmamaya, and so forth. This is like protecting the Lord, because now the Lord is speaking about Himself. And if somebody misinterprets these words, they can send everybody to hell by making them into mayavadis and offenders. So therefore, all of the Vaishnava acharyas, they all jump and they write wrong commentaries with definitions from the dictionaries and all this. So anyway, whatever I could find, I've told you now. So you have it in your notes. So if you meet any Mayavadis, then you can quote them from Ramanuja, Sridhar Swami, you know, from Vishwanath Chakravarti, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Srila Prabhupada. Let us finish the section. Okay. So, Arjuna asks, alright, so you're appearing in such a wonderful way, but when do you appear? And Krishna answers in text.
Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuthanam madharmasya tadatmanam shajamyaham.
Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Being unable to tolerate the decline of dharma and the increase of adharma, I appear to reverse the situation. Vishnu Chakravarti. Krishna can't tolerate when adharma rises. So here again, you have the word atmanam shrijami, which is Madhu Sudan Saraswati, also a great scholar, says, with the help of Yoga Maya, I exhibit my Nitya Siddha Deha as if it were created by material nature. So this Madhu Sudan Saraswati is quoted by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. And it's a very interesting comment. With the help of Yoga Maya, I exhibit my Nitya Siddha Deha, my eternally liberated, perfected form. with the help of Yoga Maya, as if it were created by material nature. In other words, it looks ordinary to the people who were present 5,000 years ago. Not all of them understood that Krishna was God. Only very enlightened persons like the Pandavas and Bhishma and a few others. Drona also. But very few people could understand